My oldest son graduated from high school. He tried college, and because he's a lot like his father, that didn't work out very well. And so he got a job, and he was working at Little Caesars, when we used to have a Little Caesars here in town. He was working at Little Caesars and trying to figure out what he was going to do. And one day he came home and he said, "Would you like to go with me over to the recruiter and talk about me joining the Army?" And I thought, well, this is kind of a lark. I mean, this is not really his sort of thing. There's no way he's really going to go through with this. And of course he did. And from that first experience of going over there to talk to the recruiter, our experience with the military can be described in one word: waiting. We had to wait to see somebody. Once he decided to sign up, we had to wait to hear back. When we took him up to MEPS, we had to wait to get in. And then once he got in, we waited all day long. Then when he got his ship date, we had to wait forever for that to come around. And then when we took him to the airport, we had to sit around there and wait all day for his flight to leave. It was one experience of waiting after another. The fact is, if you are a human being, though, and I think most of you in here are, if you are a human being, it is part of the human experience that you are going to have to wait. You're going to have to wait. It is a universal experience. You are going to wait on doctors. You're going to wait at the DMV. You are going to wait in traffic. You're going to wait for the preacher to get to the point. You're going to wait. There's going to be waiting. If you are a human being, you are going to wait on a lot of things. And one of those things that you're going to wait on is God. You're going to have to wait on God. If you're a believer, you will wait on God a lot more than you'd like to. Because every believer in every era has had to wait on God. How long was it between the time that God said to Abraham, "You're going to have kids," till they actually had one? How many years? 25 years. Then he got the little sucker and he thought, "Oh, I wish it had been a little longer. I'd like one of them chips Jay was talking about to put in his brain." Wait till Charlie turns 13, Jay. You'll wish you had one of those, I promise you. But it was 25 years, and Abraham and Sarah had to sit around and wait. And so waiting on God is part of every believer's experience. David, the man after God's own heart, the man that you would think God would have said, "Look, I'm going to, because you're so awesome, like David's are, I'm going to make sure everything happens just right along." And David, how many times did he write about waiting for the Lord? Habakkuk, the prophet of the Lord, said to God, "How long am I going to have to see what I'm seeing?" Jesus told his own apostles in Acts chapter 1, "I want you to go to Jerusalem and what? Wait for what it is that happens." Paul said in Romans chapter 8 that the experience of the Christian is waiting, waiting on our adoption, waiting on our glorification, waiting for our redemption. You're going to have to wait. You're going to have to wait on God to work on that marriage. You're going to have to wait. You have to wait on God to work on that money thing. You're just going to have to wait. You're going to have to wait on God to handle that health problem. You're just going to have to wait. But God said a lot of things. He said He would do a lot of things. He didn't say He's going to do them right now. And the fact is that you are going to have to wait. You're just going to have to wait. But here's the good news. Turn over to 1 Peter chapter 5. There's a bit of very good news. You're not going to like it. It's good. It's one of those things that it's good news, but you're going to hate it. I just put it that way. It's good news, but you're not going to like it. You're going to wish it was different, but it's good news. 1 Peter chapter 5 is where I want to begin. 1 Peter chapter 5. Peter says that elders, we have three of them, Neil and Ray and Troy, those who fill the office of the eldership, he tells them how to do it. He says, not under compulsion, be voluntary, it's not not for what you get out of it. Do it eagerly, don't dominate the congregation, be an example. And he says that all of this in verse 2 is to be done according to the will of God. Elders are over God's people, each congregation, but they have somebody who's over them. And elders are to submit to God. But then he says, also in verse 5, elders aren't the only ones doing the submitting. He says, you younger men, be subject to your elders. And so elders submit to God. Young men, submit to the elders. You say, well, I'd love to know, do I fit in that category? Am I a young man? Do I have to submit? Well, it depends on how old you are. A young man is any man, and the congregation here is well familiar with the definition. A young man is any man 57 and younger. Now, in December 1st, that's going to change. It'll be 58 and younger. But for now, it's 57. But the younger men need to submit. That's difficult. Younger men don't do that very well. Younger men like to do things their own way. But elders submit to God. Young men submit to... So I'm not in any of that. I'm not an elder. I'm not a young man. Well, you're here because he says that all of us, verse 5, all of us need to clothe ourselves with humility toward one another. We need to submit to other believers. Now, the idea of submission means, by definition, the idea of submission means you're going to have to do some stuff you don't like to do. That's what it means. If everything was what you wanted, you'd never have to submit. You'd always get your way. But there are times that you have to say, this is what I really want to do, but God won't let me. The elders have decided otherwise. Other Christians need me to do this, and I've got to do something different. And isn't that difficult? Isn't that so hard? Isn't that difficult to put your own desire away and do something different than what you really want? That's so hard. But here's what he says in verse 6. Therefore, humble yourselves, all of us, under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you. Here's the key, when? When is God going to exalt you? When you're ready. When you want it. When you think it's time. If he says, if you'll do the right thing and you're going to be humble and submissive, God is going to exalt you. When is he going to do that? When you want him to? What about when your mom wants him to? You know, there have been times that I've been maybe treated a little unfairly or I've been disgraced a little bit about something. And my mom's not down with that, man. My mom doesn't like that. And my mom wants that taken care of yesterday. She doesn't like that when her baby boy gets mistreated, right? Because I'm the only one, as if you couldn't tell. I'm the only one. And she don't like that. And she thinks when I've been a little bit mistreated, that needs to be made right. And it's time, today. But you don't get it when your mom wants it, right? What does he say? He says, God will exalt you at the proper time. Whose time is that? Yours? Mom's? Whose time is that? That's His time. That's His time. So here's the good news that you're going to hate. The good news is that God always has perfect timing. Always. God is never too early. God is never too late. God never wakes up late and says, oh, I overslept again, and I was supposed to do that thing for Ricky, and now I can't do it. Ah. He never says, should have put that on the calendar. Here I was supposed to do something for Bill today. Forgot all about it. Doesn't happen. God's timing is always perfect. What are we going to hate about that? It's not your timing. Not my timing. It's His timing. But it's perfect. Look what the Bible says. I think more times than we realize, the Bible says this. Look at Galatians 4, 3 to 5. He says, we were held in bondage under the elemental things of the world, but when the fullness of the time came, God sent forth His Son. I want you to notice something back in Genesis chapter 5. Have you ever noticed this back in Genesis? I think this is fascinating. Genesis chapter 5. So notice what Paul is saying in Galatians chapter 4. He says that God sent Jesus when? When did He send Him? At exactly the, when everything was ready. This morning in Bible class, right, what were we talking about? The Greeks getting everything ready, the Jews, the Romans, everything's perfect so that the gospel could explode in the Mediterranean world. God brought Jesus into the world at the right time. The promise of Jesus had been made thousands of years. If you're a young earth creationist like I am, you think maybe no more than 10,000 years, right? Between 6 and 10,000 years is my view. But the first promise of Jesus had been made, say, 10,000 years before Jesus came. That's a long time to wait. If you tell me that you're going to show up at my house and help me with something and you haven't been there in 10,000 years, I'm probably going to think you're not coming. Probably. 10,000 years, long time to wait. But what God did was bring Jesus into the world. But notice something. See, this is one of those, look at what Genesis 5 is. Will you look and see what Genesis, what is Genesis 5? That's one of those what passages? One of those genealogy passages. You know you just blow through that. You know when you're doing your through the Bible in a year, you know you don't read Genesis 5. You check it off, but you know you ain't reading that. But here's the kind of thing that you're missing. So notice Genesis chapter 5. Lamech, who is the father of Noah, it says Lamech, I'm sorry, verse 29, Lamech fathers a son. He called his name Noah, saying, listen to what he says, saying, this one will give us rest from our work and from the toil of our hands arising from the ground which the Lord has cursed. When did the Lord do that? In Genesis chapter 3, He cursed the ground, but He said, I'm going to make things right because there's a time coming, He said, when a man is going to come and he's going to get bruised on the heel, but he's going to crush the head of Satan. And He was talking about Jesus. And they were looking from that time, they were looking for a deliverer. They were looking for somebody to come and get rid of all this difficulty and make things right. And when Noah is born, Lamech looked at his baby boy and said what? Maybe that's him. Maybe that's the Messiah. Maybe he's the one. People did that for 8,000 years. It was 10,000 years ago from now, 8,000 from when Jesus was born. People did that. People who knew the promise of God were having babies, and every time they had a boy baby, were saying, maybe that's him. Maybe that's him for 8,000 years. And 8,000 years later or so, He finally came. Why did He come at the time He did? Because it was the right time. Because God always does things at the right time. 1 Timothy chapter 2, Jesus gave Himself as a ransom for all, the testimony given at the proper time. Also, Romans chapter 5, while we were still helpless. See, this is one of those phrases that we just pass over, isn't it? When we're looking at that verse, we don't think about that phrase right there. While we were still helpless, we know that Christ died for the ungodly. Look what it says. He died for the ungodly when? At the right time. How many times during the ministry of Jesus, Jesus and his mother are at a wedding and she says, hey, they ran out of wine. You need to make them some more. And what did Jesus say? It's not my time yet. It's not time for that yet. Now, because it's mom, he went ahead. But it wasn't really time yet. John chapter 7. They're going up to a feast in Jerusalem. Everybody is going to be there. And his brother said, look, if you're such a big shot, why don't you go up there and tell everybody just flat out who you are? What did Jesus say? Not my time. It's not my time. Because there was a very specific time, and Jesus died at that time. Titus chapter 1, this is going to be our text for this morning. In fact, let's turn over there and look at it. Titus chapter 1. So Paul is introducing, getting into his letter to Titus, his protege, his representative. Titus was, we always call Titus and Timothy evangelists. They were more than that. They were men who carried the authority of Paul in the places where they were. And so Paul is writing to Titus and telling Titus how things are supposed to go in the church where he is. But he's giving Titus some encouragement. And he says, look at verse 1, Titus 1. Paul, a bondservant of God and an apostle of Jesus Christ, for the faith of those chosen of God and the knowledge of the truth, which is according to godliness, verse 2, in the hope of eternal life, which God, who cannot lie, promised long ages ago. But look what he says. When did he bring it about? When did he manifest it? When did he fulfill it? He promised long ages ago, but at the proper time manifested. When did he act? At the right time. How right? Perfectly right. Because that's what he does. So I want to take that and just break that down a little bit and look at these couple of verses for just a little bit, and then we'll be done. I want to begin with this statement that Paul makes that God cannot lie. He can't. People say God can do anything. No, he can't. The people just throw that out there. God can do anything. He can't. He literally cannot do anything. Because one of the things that God cannot do is tell a falsehood. He can't. If it comes out of his mouth, it must be true. It has to be true. He can't lie. He cannot tell something that is not true. If he says he will do it, he will. But what does he not always say? Doesn't always say when he'll do it. If he says he'll do it, but he doesn't always say when he will do it. So that's where we get messed up. That's where we have difficulty. And turn back to Luke 24. A side issue to that is he doesn't always say how he's going to do it. See, this is where we get messed up. We hear what God said, but then we think we know when he's going to do it and how he's going to do it, and we never know that stuff, almost never. Look at Luke 24. Jesus has been crucified, and he has been raised from the dead. And this is one of those really kind of weird passages. A couple of disciples of Jesus are walking down the road after he's been raised from the dead. And Jesus sort of sidles up next to him and starts walking with them, but he's in disguise. They don't know it's him. And so they're talking about all this stuff that's going on. And Jesus says, what are y'all talking about? And they're like, are you the only one in the world who doesn't know what's going on? And they begin to tell Jesus about Jesus. But notice what they say. Verse 19, Jesus says to them, what things, what's going on? They said to him, the things about Jesus the Nazarene, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word in the sight of God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to the sentence of death and crucified him. Notice verse 21. But we were hoping, that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Now, what does that statement tell you about where they are right now? What do they say? We were hoping it was him who was going to redeem Israel. What does that tell you? They're not hoping that anymore. They don't believe that anymore. But what do you and I know that they didn't know? It was him. And he was about to do it. On the day of Pentecost, he was about to do it. But he was going to do it through the Holy Spirit and the apostles, not an army and a bunch of swords. He was going to do it, but not when they thought and not how they thought. And so they're experiencing all of this heartburn because they have misunderstood when and how. We do the same thing. And we've got to be careful about holding God to expectations He has never given. I want you to notice that Paul in Titus chapter 1 talks about the promise of God. God always follows through on His promises. But be careful about assuming that God has made you a promise He hasn't. This is where we have a problem. So, just some examples. God has promised you peace. He has not promised you a pain-free life. So don't look around and say, where is all of this pain coming from? Didn't God promise me peace? Yeah, but He never promised you that you would never have difficulty. God promised you provision, not prosperity. You look around and say, man, what's up with these bills, and what's up with this lack, and what's up with this worry and this concern? What's going on with that? I thought God promised to provide what I need. Well, if you're still alive today, I think He's done that. But He never promised that you would just have all the prosperity in spite of what some preachers say. God promised you hope for the future, not instant answers every time you want them. God never promised you that. God promised you eternal joy, not constant happiness. He never promised that. So we've got to understand, in fact, here are some things that God did promise you. Persecution and hatred, He promised you that. He told you, you're going to be hated. So where the surprise comes from, I'll never know. Why, when bad things happen, and Christians are mistreated, and sometimes it gets really violent and deadly, and we go, oh, I can't believe the world is like this. Well, you were promised it would happen. He promised that. He promised testing and trials. He promised suffering and hardship. He promised you spiritual warfare. He promised that He would discipline you and correct you. He promised that there would be times that you would grieve and that you would lose. And He promised you that there would be discord and strife among the people that you love the most. And yet, what do we look around and go, I can't believe this is going on when He say told you that it was going to happen. These are the promises that God made. We need to notice what Paul reminds us of in this passage. God promised long ago. God promised long ago. Turn over to Acts chapter 1. And I want to remind you of something that Jesus told the apostles that we also need to be reminded of. That sometimes God makes a promise and it is a very long time before we know anything about its fulfillment. Would you please, if you write in your Bible, and you should, here's something that you should underline. When Jesus has been raised and He's talking to His apostles, in verse 6, they had come together and they asked Him, saying, Lord, is it at this time You are restoring the kingdom to Israel? We want to know some answers. We want to know what You're doing, and we want to look at what they say. Is it at this time? What did He say to them? Here's what you need to underline. It is not for you to know times or epochs which the Father has fixed by His own authority. That is not your business. It is not your concern. What happens and when, not your concern. That is for God to be concerned about and to bring about when He is ready. And His timing is always perfect. But he reminds us, Paul does, that Jesus, that God and Jesus always do things at the proper time. So let me ask you a question. If you're waiting right now, if you've got a health issue, and all you can do is wait to figure that thing out or see what happens, if you've got a money struggle, and it's really getting you down, if you've got a problem in your family and it's really keeping you up at night, you need to know that God is going to handle that in the proper time. The question, though, is what do we do in the meantime? If you're waiting on God, what should you be doing in the meantime? Because He will handle things at the proper time. What do you do in the meantime? Well, you pray. You pray that God would fulfill His plan. You remember what Peter said in 2 Peter chapter 3 when he's talking about the end of time. And he said that as a believer, you need to be looking for and hastening the day of His return. When I was younger, I didn't get that. When I was younger, I didn't understand that. Wait a minute, man, I'm supposed to be eager for Jesus to come back and everything to end? Well, that's crazy talk. I'm supposed to want that to hurry up and happen? But I'm so young, and I've got so much to do, and so many places I want to go. And then one day I woke up and I thought, man, I wish He'd come back right now. Because this place is crazy. These people are crazy. This whole place is on fire. This place has just lost all sanity. And I'm like, would you come on now? That's what he means. But we need to be praying for the fulfillment of all that God has planned, and we need to be praying for our own growth. Lord, help me handle this. I'm not sure I can. We need to be deepening our trust through Bible study and fellowship. I posted something on Facebook this morning that what I needed more than anything today was this right here. That what I needed more than anything after this week, what I needed more than anything was this right here. I needed to be here, and I needed you. I needed for us to be together. I needed what you bring. And I needed to try to help you out in whatever way I can. I needed this more than maybe I've ever needed it before after the week we've had. This is where we get the faith and strength and trust to keep going. But I'll tell you something else that we've got to do that you may not like as much. We've got to be obedient. We've got to be obedient. You don't know everything, but you know some things, and you got to do those things. So in some ways, that's the whole sum of the Christian life, is to quit worrying about what you don't know and just do what you know, which is pretty simple. It's not real hard to know what it is. You just got to do it. And you have to be doing whatever you can do to make the plan work out. God said He would provide for my needs, and so I'm going to sit here on the couch with my hands out and wait for Him to drop it in my lap. Not going to happen. God said that He would help me have a wonderful, happy home. So I'm just going to sit around and wait for God to work at my house rather than me apologizing or serving or straightening up or quit being a knucklehead or whatever it is that would make my home a better place. Right? We have to do what makes the plan go forward. This is what we do when we're waiting. It's not just waiting, it's actively waiting. Well, next week, Lord willing, We're going to be in Psalm 37, and we're going to be talking about the fact that evil has an expiration date. It looks like that evil is just going to keep going and getting worse, and it's just, we're stuck with it. Not true. Because there is coming a time when all evil will be dealt with. And we'll talk about that, Lord willing, next week. You can take out your songbook, by the way, and turn the invitation song. We'll sing that in just a moment. So just to wrap up, just think about, what are you waiting for? So what is God's promise? I would encourage you to rethink what it is you're expecting God to do. Because you might have a lot of heartburn today because God isn't doing something that He never said He would do anyway. You might be all upset that God isn't doing something, but He never told you to do that anyway. You need to know if you've got a real promise of God or not. And then you have to examine your own heart. Do you really believe that God always tells the truth? Do you really believe that God always falls? Do you really believe that? If you don't, you need to strengthen that faith muscle. And are you doing what you're supposed to be doing right now? Don't look. Don't clap back at God because God isn't doing what He's supposed to if you're not doing what you're supposed to. You got to do what you're supposed to do. So examine yourself and see, are you being obedient to what God has told you to do? You say, I don't know. Hey, you don't have to know everything. Do what you know and let God handle what God will handle. So we're going to sing this invitation song. It's an opportunity for all of us to just think about where we are. Spiritually, it might be that you are not a Christian. We've been talking mostly to Christians this morning. You also are going to have to deal with God acting in perfect time. But the end result of that, if you're not a Christian, is not going to be something that you're going to enjoy. God is going to act in perfect time, and part of that is going to be judgment. And those who are not Christians are going to suffer. We say that with sadness, but we have to say it because it's true. And so if you're not a Christian, we'd like to talk to you about how to become one. If you are a Christian and you're struggling with doubting or worrying or believing, we'd love to help you with that. If you need encouragement, if you need someone to stand with you or pray with you or listen to you, that's what we're here for. The church is God's gift to us to help us wait without giving up. And we'd love to do that with you this morning. So whatever you need is this morning, we'd love to talk with you privately after church. You can come forward and take a seat on the front as we stand and sing together.